Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and online, kpcg.fm. Coming up on today's edition, people are very concerned with money. If you look at the headlines today, it's full of examples of fraud and abuses in the world of finance. Today, we're going to take a look at a case of fraud that you might find hard to believe. A very interesting story. We'll look at that coming up on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG. Online, we're at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. And if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at kpcgfm. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here with you today. And if you look at the headlines, Grant, you can pick pretty much any day of the week, any week of the year, and there's usually something going on with finances, whether it's the U.S. economy or whether it's personal finance. There's a story today about how people in the U.S. are not paying enough taxes, whether intentionally or not, I guess. Maybe they're confused by the tax code. Maybe they're not paying them. So people are always concerned about money. There's been some big money scams over the years that I think people would recognize if you threw a few names out there. And so we're going to take a look at a story today of financial fraud, and it takes place in the world of religion. People don't like it when religions take their money and don't use it correctly.
Yeah, and that's what we're talking about today from the book Raising the Ruins. And it's really just a stunning story. It's hard to believe that it's true because of just the amount of dishonesty that went into it and hoarding hundreds of millions of dollars in the leadership. It's quite a change of direction in that church.
Yeah, the book's Raising the Ruins. It's at thetrumpet.com, and it's free. You can get it there. You can read it. Right. You can read along as we talk about it. You can also have it mailed to you, which is a really good-sized book, so it's good to get it for free, have it sent to you, and that way you can kind of go through it and mark it up. But anyway, the book's Raising the Ruins. It talks about the what used to be the Worldwide Church of God, which doesn't exist anymore, I guess, at least not in the way it used to. And so it's a really interesting story. There are, if you go on the internet, which of course, beware of fake news, right? But if you go on there and you were to look at, say, fraud in religion or things like that, there's all kinds of stories that pop up. CBS This Morning, they went after somebody that was pretty famous in that world, I guess, for self-indulgence. HBO, John Oliver, I think people are familiar with him. He's he's an interesting character. Anyway, he's gone after some stories like this as well. There's a lot of other stories like that. So, but this one isn't really on the radar as much because it's not, I don't know, it's just not out there in the limelight like some of these other cases are.
And really it should be, because I don't know if anything like this has ever happened where leadership comes in after the founder of the church dies and then they completely change the mission of the church. They downsize drastically in a matter of a year or two or three. And then they pretty much close down all the church's worldwide operations and keep the money for themselves.
Yeah, that's, I think, what usually happens is, you know, people give money to some organization and they may not know what they do with it. But this case is different because people did know what was being done with it, and then that changed, but no one was alerted to the fact that it was being changed, at least not as much as they would have liked to have been. Here's a quote from that book, Raising the Ruins, to kind of set the stage for you. If you're not familiar with this, again, it's free at thetrumpet.com. You can check it out. It says, millions of people around the world are familiar with the expansive humanitarian and evangelistic work of Herbert W. Armstrong, even though he died, it's almost 30 years, I guess, right? 1986?
31 years now.
31. Yeah. You're the math guy, so I leave that to you. But yeah, it's been over 30 years already, which is amazing. But very well known, very popular. Years ago, actually, we were in Portland, Oregon, where he did some of his early work, I guess. He was there. There's a famous library that he went to, famous from his autobiography, where he talks about he went there and he looked into the Sabbath and evolution. And so we were there filming some of that just for making a historical film about it. And some random guy in the street comes up. He says, "What are you guys doing?" And we said, "Well, you know, we're filming this thing." And we explained it was about Herbert W. Armstrong. And he's like, "Oh, yeah, I know who that is." Like, everyone we ran into on the street knew. They'd heard him. They'd seen him on radio, or seen him on television, rather, heard him on the radio. And so he had a huge impact. You know, you have to think about that time period. You didn't have all the cable channels you have today. You didn't have a billion radio stations. There was only several that really hit a large audience, and Herbert Armstrong was on those, very well known and listened to by really thousands, probably millions of people in the United States.
Right, and he was just absolutely dynamic on the radio, just the way he was able to build suspense and then give you the answer at the very end of the program, or the way sometimes he would just shout all of a sudden and it kind of startle you a little bit, but it just was always attention grabbing and attention keeping the whole way through. He just had a way of really presenting God's truth in a way that no one else could.
Yeah, and he built up quite a following. So lots of people were very much involved with his work and supported that for many, many years. And then, of course, he dies in 1986, and all of a sudden that work is different. It's changed. Raising the Ruins says tens of thousands, mostly people affiliated with the Worldwide Church of God, which Mr. Armstrong founded, are aware of what happened to that organization after he died. When the next administration came in and rejected his teachings, they deserted his worldwide mission and reduced the church to a small mainstream Christian denomination with practically no work. You can't really find it today. It's not really out there like it used to be, for sure. But this book says very few, however, know what really happened behind the scenes during this transformation. And there is a scandalous reason for that. So when you get into this book, Raising the Ruins, it is sort of like a mystery novel, I guess, in a way. And it takes a look at what happened behind the scenes. It's not guesswork. It's from actual documents. And it's a startling story of not only changing beliefs, but what happened to all the money? That's a big question, and this book looks at that.
Right, and like Mr. Armstrong often said, the truth is much stranger than fiction. That's the case with this book. He actually started out with his whole congregation in the church pitching in about $1.35 a week so that he could go on the radio. It started so small, and yet it really came to where it encompassed the world. 8 million Plain Truth magazine subscribers, hundreds and hundreds of television stations and people who tuned in. That was just a work that pretty much everyone had heard of, or someone they knew had heard of it. It really did go around the entire world. He met with hundreds of world leaders, and yet you see the exact opposite happen when he dies in 1986. Even before he died, that's the really treacherous part. People were working behind the scenes trying to shelve some of his literature without telling him, of course, because he was traveling the world and getting the gospel out there to faraway nations. They were dismantling the truth before he even died. And then, of course, whenever he died, they did it very quickly, all while pretending like they weren't.
Yeah, it's really quite a story, and it's brought out here in Raising the Ruins, which is it's a good sized book, but it's a quick read too, because it's very interesting. But to set the stage a little bit for what that work that you were talking about there, Grant, some of the statistics that are brought out in Raising the Ruins here. When Herbert Armstrong died in 1986, there were 725 congregations in 57 countries. So when it was called the Worldwide Church of God, that wasn't an exaggeration. It was worldwide. Weekly worldwide attendance of about 120,000 people. Obviously, there are some mega churches that are quite large, but this was still a very large organization. 210,000 outside the church donated money regularly, and there was 1,200 ministers worldwide. So it was a huge organization, and at that time, 1986, the church's annual revenue was $163.7 million. That is a fair bit. That's a little more than I have in my personal account. Just a touch. I can't even do the math, but a lot more. That was a budget bigger than Jerry Falwell's and Billy Graham's organizations combined. And, of course, those are well-known people, and they made a lot of money. So it tells you how big this organization was.
It really was. And he wrote pretty much monthly coworker letters for many, many years, decades. And one of them, July 22nd, 1984, he talked about how it literally had grown, in some cases, 60% over the previous year. So 1984 over 83, Mail received was up 33.1%. Phone calls requesting literature was up 21.8%. New subscribers to the Plain Truth up 53.5%. Plain Truth circulation in the U.S. up 27.9%. Good news circulation was up 60.7%. New correspondence course students up 23%. Books and booklets sent up 37.2%. And he talked about in another coworker letter just how it's the greatest success story of our time. What business or enterprise do you ever see that grows year by year about 30% every single year for 30 years? It's just astounding to think of the numbers like that and really what has ever been like it in the world.
Yeah, if you can have that type of growth rate, that's astounding in anything. And of course, also in addition to those statistics, just on a lot of television stations, 197 markets as early as 1986, just all over the place, 382 television stations was the far more markets than any other religious program in America at the time, and there was 36 radio outlets around the world as well. So if you grew up in that time period or you were alive in the mid-80s and you happened to turn on the TV, chances are you ran across the World Tomorrow program, or you may have heard it on the radio too. A lot of people did that. And of course, like you said, they had the Plain Truth magazine, 8.4 million circulation. Times magazine's circulation was only 5.9 million that year. So everybody knows Time magazine. And here the Plain Truth had almost 3 million more subscribers annually.
Yeah, and the only problem is it's been gone for decades now, and so people may have forgotten about it after all this time. But if you really think about back then, more people would have known about what Mr. Armstrong was doing than these other huge organizations.
Yeah, as Raising the Ruins points out here, the world population at that time was 4.9 billion people. So if you did the math there, which thankfully they did for us, that means one out of every 583 humans on Earth received the magazine.
Wow.
So that's pretty amazing. You know, today, a lot of companies have huge reach with the internet, but to have an actual physical magazine come to your house or your business or whatever and be one out of every 583 people. And then, of course, it spreads around, too. Other people look at it or whatever. And so it really was a huge, huge global work. And then, but again, if you looked for it today, you wouldn't find it. Not under that organizational name anyway. And so it's amazing how big it was when you really stop and look at those numbers, and almost like it vanished into thin air.
Right. And Mr. Armstrong was always so focused on growth, and plenty of his coworker letters, you can just feel the passion coming out of them because he's talking about a new newsstand program or some other aspect of the work that's growing. Maybe they purchased more television stations. It was always about putting that precious truth into the hands or into the minds of more people. It wasn't about keeping money for himself. It was always about trying to serve, trying to use the money that people donated wisely. And that's why you could see so easily the fruits of it. The fruits of the work were tremendous. It wasn't about hoarding it, which is what the predecessors did.
Yeah, I mean, people donate to all kinds of charities, you know, whether it be a religious organization or whether it be, Red Cross or whatever. And I think people are happy to do that and like to do it as long as the money is going where they want it to go and it's being used for what they hope it's used for. If you see that commercial on TV where they're trying to, you know, you donate a certain amount and they want to feed the children in some country, I think people are okay with that as long as you're actually feeding the people in that right. country. And that's always the question. And so there was so many people, over 100,000 people plus, really dedicating their lives to supporting what Mr. Armstrong was doing because they believed in it. And they didn't mind doing that. And so there was that was a massive organization. And then as Raising the Ruins points out, in less than a generation, the money was gone, the people were scattered, and the work was stopped. Would you think, they ask, a person would have been wise if they did that with what they were given? You know, if you were, imagine that, if you were given a company and you said, they said, okay, well, you know, take over. And you came back in a few years and said, hey, I blew it all. You probably wouldn't be working in the business world, that's for sure.
Well, I don't think any people who do that anywhere outside of this situation, outside of religion, could have escaped being in prison for it, because it is really a severe thing what they did. You think of the millions of people who were so interested in what was going on in the Worldwide Church of God and how excited they were to support it with their money. It took a very long time for people to realize, you know, it even took 5 or 6 years in some cases. If you were over in Europe and you didn't even speak the language and it had to be translated to you, it took a very long time for people like that to even realize that the work they were giving their money to had actually changed drastically, and it wasn't even something that they would want to support anymore. I've talked to people like that from Europe and other places who say, yeah, we were giving money for 5 years and it just was being wasted on people who were intent on destroying everything Mr. Armstrong did.
Yeah. And that's really, I mean, that's where it becomes very fraudulent, I suppose, is people are donating to something, but they're not being honest about what they're doing with it. And nobody likes that, of course. If you just look in the business world, I thought this was a really interesting example. The Dallas Cowboys. A lot of people like football, and they like the Dallas Cowboys. I guess it's America's team. I would think it would be the Packers, but some people say it's the Dallas Cowboys. But you look at Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. According to Forbes magazine, Jones in 1989 bought the Dallas Cowboys for $150 million. The team today is worth $4.2 billion. And so that's an example, obviously, of somebody taking something and making it much, much bigger and much more productive. But if you look at that same time period, 1989, 1986 through, I guess, the 90s, for the Worldwide Church of God, they did the exact opposite. I mean, even Jerry Jones built the Cowboys into this huge thing. If you are smart with what you're doing and you're honest, I don't know necessarily about Jerry Jones, but I mean, if you're being honest with what you're doing, things should grow and expand, and the opposite happened.
Well, look at that. Basically a kingdom he has as a new stadium there in Dallas now. It, clearly, a lot of money is being spent. The fans are spending money, but the money's being spent to build a stadium. It's being spent in a wise way to try to build a good team. They have a really good team now. They're spending money on those contracts. You can see right in front of your face what that money would be going toward. And, of course, Jerry Jones made money. He has earned the right to make money, but look how much the Cowboys have expanded since he got them.
Yeah, so that's just an example of somebody being smart in the world as far as business and so forth. And like you said, you know, if you pay for your ticket, you know what you're getting. Mm-hmm. You're going to get a Dallas Cowboys game. You'd be pretty disappointed if you paid for it and you showed up and it was the local high school team.
Right. Yeah.
It'd be fraudulent, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Imagine that. That's the whole issue of it is people should be able to receive what they wanted from their money. And in the WCG, that didn't happen at all. It's really, when you think of any company or any enterprise, it's about what is produced. It's about growth. Hopefully, you'd think it would be about growth unless you were in a lot of debt and you had to downsize. That definitely wasn't the case of the WCG. They paid off their bills. Their budget was always balanced. They didn't have to close down any of the college campuses. They didn't have to take all these books and booklets out of print. This is from Chapter 10 of Raising the Ruins. The chapter is called The Agenda. Mr. Stephen Fleury writes, "I'll begin with my conclusion. The transformation of the Worldwide Church of God over the past 13 years at the time has not been based upon truth, as Joseph DeKotch Jr. suggests in his 1997 book, Transformed by Truth. The church has been transformed for sure, but certainly not by truth. In his book, he accuses Mr. Armstrong, the church's founder, of creating hooks to, in effect, capture members like a fisherman working to snag a largemouth bass. Yet it is this other man who has baited the most enticing hook of all and reeled in over 50,000 members, convincing them that what they once proved to be true and right has all been a lie. Another 40,000 or so who didn't quite bite have been turned off from religion altogether, and around 20,000 former members of the Worldwide Church of God have rejected the bait and are looking for spiritual food elsewhere." So that's a pretty gigantic calamity if you're talking about over 100,000 members. Very quickly, the membership was decreased by more than half. He completely turned people off from religion, about 40,000. 20,000 others went elsewhere to try to go to a different church. That just kind of shows you how destructive the leadership was, because no one was stopping them from starting their own church. No one was stopping them from going their own way somewhere else, but what they decided to do was ruin other people's lives by changing the church that was already in place. And it's a pretty big scandal there.
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, if you were to come out, if the leadership of an organization came out and said, "Look, we're making all these wide sweeping changes. If you want to support that, you can. If you don't, you know, fine. But that wasn't what happened. It was deceptive. But there was a lot of money involved there. Mm-hmm. And as Raising the Ruins points out, the money by the tens of millions kept flowing into the headquarters area there, even as late as 2004. And Stephen Fleury writes, think about that. By 1995, virtually everything in the church had been decentralized. In other words, the congregations all around the world, they were kind of on their own. You do your own thing. We're not going to be helping you or supporting you, but we would like you to keep sending us your money. That's which is what occurred. And so that had, but the money kept coming in there. In 2003, they had collected $18.6 million in revenue. And from that amount, they returned 105 back. That's 8%. That's a pretty good racket if you can, people want, if they're trying to make money. It's just one example of how, even though the Worldwide Church of God changed all their beliefs, they still kept taking money from people that in some cases didn't know that the beliefs were changed.
Right. And we were talking about, it's all about growth for any sort of enterprise. And yet they immediately started cutting everything while taking in more and more money than even the church under Mr. Armstrong ever got, because it just kept increasing. That was the trajectory of the work. They kept on taking in well over $200 million a year. And yet in 1987, they cut down the United States and Britain in Prophecy book, which was Mr. Armstrong's most popular book ever. 5 million requested it. Editors chopped out 70% of that book. They did the same thing with Mystery of the Ages to water down that book as well. And then the next year, they took United States and Britain in Prophecy out of circulation entirely. So that was only 2 years after Mr. Armstrong died. They had already cut down the most popular book and gotten rid of it completely. In 1988, they took out Mystery of the Ages. And then in 1988 as well, the Book of Revelation Unveiled at Last was discontinued. So there's just so many examples like this. There's like 10 others in the next 3 or 4 years that they got rid of. They were very quickly dismantling everything that had been built. They weren't even producing anything themselves. They were just tearing things down.
Yeah, and under Mr. Armstrong, that money that came in was used to do that, to get those books out, to get magazines out, to be on television, that's what it was being used for, and that's what people were supporting and were excited to support. And then, of course, he was traveling around the world, meeting with a lot of world leaders, taking God's message to them as well, which is, you know, it's a pretty rare thing to be able to do that. But as you mentioned there, even though all these things began to be disassembled, the money was still coming in. So I don't know where it was going, but it was going somewhere. Just some more statistics here from Raising the Ruins. Some of the downsizing they did, the Plains Truth circulation was capped. Even though people wanted it, it could have grown. They said, no, we'll just keep it where it is. The Good News and Youth magazines, those were reduced, later gotten rid of. The Good News was discontinued a few years later, you know, in the early 90s. In 1988, the church's revenue topped out at $201 million. That's a lot of money to work with. It was the first time ever to exceed $200 million and represented 4.8% growth over 1987. But in response to that extra money, they just began to cut more and more things. And that's really highlighted in more detail here in this book, Raising the Ruins.
Yeah, and they were the frustrating part about it is that they presented themselves as good stewards of God's money while they were cutting down. They were cutting corners in every way possible and acting like they were just being cost effective. But the thing was, they had plenty of money that they could have used to expand even more. That they just wanted to cut it down and then apparently take the money for themselves. Also, what they did for years, probably 6 or 7 years, was they pretended like they weren't even making any changes. They would say, oh, well, Mystery of the Ages is only out of circulation temporarily, but we'll get it back in there. Sure enough, it never happened. Then in about 1993, they started saying, well, Mr. Armstrong told us on his deathbed that we were supposed to make these changes. So finally everyone realized, oh, so you did know you were making changes this whole time. And then in 1994, they started calling Mr. Armstrong a heretic. So first, for like 6 or 7 years, no changes at all. Then after 7 years, well, we were told to make these changes. And then after that, well, he was a heretic once all the changes were made and it was out in the open. So just the amount of lies you could never even calculate.
Yeah, and the thing is, people, unless the people live through it, you don't know about it. You know, people, how would people know? And that's why getting Raised in the Ruins and reading it and going through it is such a good idea, because for one, it's just an interesting story. I mean, if you don't not really have any background with it, it's just an interesting story to look at. But for those who do have a background, and there's a lot of people that do on some level, they or their families, it's good to remember all that happened, because people forget. I mean, we're talking 30 years now, and people forget what happened and think that, well, I guess time just moves on. But it is a story worth looking at, and it's history worth remembering. And if you don't have it written down, you forget. And that's, I think, what happened to, I mean, a lot of people have died since then. You know, and they just, their living memory of these things has vanished. And that's why it's good to get Raised in the Ruins and look at it and look at the recorded history. Plus, there's a lot there that I think most people don't know about what happened to the Worldwide Church of God. And so you should get that at thetrumpet.com. It's free. And it's a large, good-sized book, too.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful book. The cover is really attractive as well. But, yeah, it is important to look at that. I think it could be easy to think, well, the leadership in the church could do whatever they wanted because they were in charge. But if you really look at it and you really think about it, that's not the case at all, because it wasn't their money that they were using. They could have, like I mentioned, they could have built their own church from the ground up like Mr. Armstrong did. But instead, they took other people's money and used it for the wrong purpose. They didn't have any freedom to do that at all.
There's a list here that comes from Raising the Ruins, and it's a simple comparison between some of the budgets, what the money was spent on from 1987 and 1990. So it's a comparison between those 2 years. In 1987, the Worldwide Church of God spent $180 million, and here's what they spent it on. 24% went to publishing, 23% to local congregations and field ministry, 18% broadcasting and proclaiming the gospel, which is pretty low in comparison to what it used to be. 18% for management, 10% went to the college, Ambassador College, which, by the way, you can't find today because that doesn't exist either. 4% went to member assistance and so on and so forth. And then in 1990, all those numbers were pretty much down with the exception of Ambassador College. They spent more on that. They boosted that by 7%. What good did it do? It's gone. Yeah. It's not there today. And a lot of money was being funneled into the college, trying to build a college system. And even that collapsed, and you can't find that today either.
Well, a big part of that, too, was they were pursuing accreditation. They wanted to have a piece of paper that supposedly made the college more official, and yet it is gone. It didn't really help too much to try to, get into the NCAA and compete athletically with all these other large schools. Really what happened was the standard went way down when they tried to do that. Even if you're not talking about the standard of the college, it does reveal a gigantic turn inward, because they were focusing on the college more than teaching the entire world. It was totally inward focused and more selfish, just a complete change of direction than what it was under Mr. Armstrong.
Yeah, and it was a lot of money being spent there, and the work doesn't exist today in the way that it did, and so... But there was a lot of money. If you look at the first 5 years after Mr. Armstrong died, how much money came into the Worldwide Church of God at that time? About $673 million came in between 1986 and 1990. Those were the earlier years, 1981 to 85. That was under Mr. Armstrong. So $673 million. After he died, the next 5 years, it was even more than that. It was up to $998 million, which is almost $1 billion. So the reason that's important is if you look at the two time periods and how much the Worldwide Church of God was doing from 80 to 86, 85, they were doing a lot, and there was a fair bit of money. If you look at the next 5 years, there was even more money, but everything was being cut down, almost $1 billion. What could you do with $1 billion? You could do a lot with $1 billion.
And that's why their claim that they were trying to be fiscally responsible made no sense, because you had, what, $300 million more dollars? You could have at least been doing this exact same things that you were doing and had $300 million in the bank. But what's the point of that anyway? What's the point of having $300 million in the bank? What are you ever going to do with that? But not only that, they cut down drastically. And so what do they have? Probably $600 million in the bank, probably pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's amazing. And then that wasn't it. The next 5 years totaled $832 million. So it was down a little bit, but it was still a lot of money. You know, you're talking quite a bit of cash there, well over $1 billion altogether.
And we're not even talking about when they started to sell off assets. So sure they discontinued some booklets and some TV stations, but then they started to sell off like the annual festival sites, and mm-hmm. and obviously the college campus has got them a lot of money as well. And people just have to think, where did it all go? It's really disturbing to even think about that.
Yeah, that's a point here brought up in Raising the Ruins. It says the total revenue during their second 5 years, as we said, was $832 million. And then they write, where in the world did all that money go? They shut down the Pasadena campus and the toll-free number in 1990. So when people would watch the World Tomorrow program, there was no toll-free number anymore. That saved them money, but money they didn't need to save. And it made the viewer write in. When's the last time you wrote in for something?
It's been a while.
Nobody writes in for anything. You want to call the phone number or of course, today, email, I guess. So they discontinued that. The World Tomorrow went off the air altogether in 1994. The concert series that they used to have ended in 1995. The Plain Truth circulation had plummeted. And about the only thing going for the church was the college in Big Sandy at the time, and they decided to close that in 1997, so that closed down. And yet there was $832 million floating around during that time period. For what? Ugh. Where did it go? That's the question. That's it's really interesting, and it's a big part of the story here in Raising the Ruins.
Yeah, and think about that. I mean, that's more money than any of us could ever use in an entire lifetime. It's just out of control greed, because what's the point of keeping all of that for themselves? Why would you ever need close to $1 billion for yourself?
Yeah, it's a lot of money. A quote here from this book, Raising the Ruins, it says, you do the math. How could these men do so little with so much? Couldn't they at least come out of it with a moderately successful college? That's the question. Or a magazine that was at least popular within Christian communities. Stephen Fleury writes, apparently not. In doing the math, we see that everything Tkachism did to manage the Worldwide Church of God has turned out to be a miserable failure. Living through it, we heard, many people did, we heard all about their five-year plans, the big ideas, the amount of money that they were saving. But in the end, everything collapsed. And now they want us to view their repeated failures as validation for how courageous and sincere they were in pursuit of the truth, as they see it, no matter the cost. He says these men didn't sacrifice anything except the lives and investments tens of thousands of others made in support of Mr. Armstrong's work. Many people did want to support Mr. Armstrong's work, and they did that. And then, of course, after he died, everything changed, but that money was still coming in for quite some time. And as he says, had this happened in the corporate world, the CEOs and executives responsible for hijacking a corporation and then treacherously robbing its investors of their future would have been fired, if not prosecuted, in a court of law.
Yeah, that's where we try to draw that parallel there, because it isn't fair how they got away with what they did. And even though there was a court case about it, all they really ended up doing was selling us some of the copyrights to Mr. Armstrong's books. They didn't have to go to prison for it, which is probably more just.
Yes, it's really interesting. There's just to build off that point about what happens when there's a financial injustice like this. Here's some corporate scandals that you may have remembered from the headlines over the years. The Enron scandal, 2001. That was shareholders lost $74 billion, thousands of employees and investors lost their retirement accounts. Many employees lost their jobs. And the way it happened was there was huge debts off the balance sheet, so money was being hid. And people got in trouble for that. WorldCom scandal, that's another one from 2002. The Tyco scandal of 2002. HealthSound scandal, 2003. This one's probably a little more familiar. Freddie Mac. I think people remember that from a few years back, where they said they made more money than they did, so there was some wrongdoing there. And then, of course, Lehman Brothers and Bernie Madoff, which are probably the most famous ones. So we've had a lot of those things happen in the corporate world in America, and people do really keep an eye out for that type of thing, and also with religious organizations. And if you look here at this book, Raising the Ruins, there's a lot more to it than just, say, the financial side, but that's kind of what we're taking a look at today. There's a lot that went into that historically as far as changing doctrines, and there's a court case involved and a lot of great information there to look at. But just looking at the financial side of things, when you have over, you know, close to $2 billion, and yet at the end of the day, what do you have for it? An organization that disappeared. You know, there are people that are asking those questions. Well, what happened to all of that money? You can't do that in the corporate world. There's questions that are asked. But yet, for now anyway, it seems like a lot of people have forgotten that history.
I do wonder if the difference between the way that the WCG leadership after Mr. Armstrong was treated and the way that some of these other big businesses with investors were treated, it might be different because the people who contributed to the Worldwide Church of God were not putting money into an investment account and hoping to get huge dividends back. But at the same time, they were at least hoping to be able to watch the TV program and to listen to the radio show and to read the magazines and hopefully to even see more and more people hear and read what they got the chance to experience. So in that way, that is a big way that is the WCG just robbing people of their investments. It's not like people were expecting to get a bunch of money back, but still a continuing work was cut off, and that's why people had even contributed their money in the first place.
Yeah, so it's all recorded here in this book, Raising the Ruins, which is free, and it's at thetrumpet.com, and there's a lot more, again, to it than just the financial side of it. But it is really interesting to look at that. There's a verse in the Bible that is used to talk about some of this, which is Matthew 7, 16 through 20, and which basically just says that you shall know people by their fruits. You know, so if you're looking at a group and you see that the money is not being used for what it should be, it's not, you know, people donated because they wanted to see a television program go out. They wanted to see a message go out, and that message was changed, but the money was kept. That's where I think a lot of people got upset and frustrated. And so Raising the Ruins sheds light on what occurred. And again, it's not just guessing. It's actual documents of what happened behind the scenes. It's a fascinating read for people that have some history with it. And even if you don't, it's an interesting insight into what happened to that organization, what was known as the Worldwide Church of God.
And that's the appeal of the book, too. It doesn't even matter if people agree with maybe the teachings of the Worldwide Church of God. They should at least be able to read that book and understand that massive, unprecedented fraud took place. Scandal and drama like that should intrigue anybody, even if they don't agree with all of the doctrines.
Yeah. So, again, it's free. You can get it at thetrumpet.com. You can read it, download it, put it on any device of your choice. It's not all bad news, though. It's like, wow, that's a pretty downer of a of a thing to look at. And it is good history. But the good thing about it is that, of course, the title of the book is Raising the Ruins. And the reason that's the title is because that's what we're endeavoring to do. We broadcast here from the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College. And if you've ever wondered why do you call it Herbert W. Armstrong College, that's the reason, because it's based upon the teachings of Herbert W. Armstrong from the Bible. And then a lot of what he did, I mean, probably almost everything, I don't know, you could look at a list, I guess, everything that he was doing is being done again from here. Mm-hmm. And certainly not with $2 billion, but it is being done in a lot of ways. Like they talked about the Plain Truth disappearing. Well, we have the Trumpet magazine today. They talked about the World Tomorrow going away. Well, we have the Key of David program. So we're raising up the ruins of what he did, and that's where people that supported that work, in a lot of cases, are trying to support this one now.
Yes, and if you even just think about the name of the college, how it's actually named after Herbert W. Armstrong, the founder of the college, Mr. Gerald Fleury, wrote years ago just about how that's probably the best name we could have ever come up with, and it wasn't even our first choice. We used to be called Imperial College. And there was actually a college in Britain that had the same name, and so we couldn't have that name anymore. And it was almost like we were forced into having a name that more directly reflected the work that is going on here. It is a matter of upholding Mr. Armstrong's legacy, and the college name, and obviously every other aspect of the work reveals that.
Yeah, one of the pivotal moments here of the last 30 years or so has been a court case that was also talked about there in the book Raising the Ruins, or it is written about. And that was to get the right to print Mr. Armstrong's works, which include Mystery of the Ages, Incredible Human Potential, so on and so forth. There's a whole list of them. You can go to thetrumpet.com right now and get all those for free. And I think that was one of the things that was so important about that time period, is that, you know, people got to see who's really going to continue this work and who's not. I mean, a lot of people kind of say they are, but okay, well, who's actually going to go in there and go through the process of fighting for the right to produce what was written there in the past? And then, of course, there's more that's added on top of that. And so that's documented in this book, Raising the Ruins, as well. And so I think that's something that a lot of people have had an interest in. Even the Wall Street Journal came out and did an interview with some staff members and did a whole write-up about that court case. That was back, boy, 10 years ago or more. Time flies. But that history is all recorded there in this book as well. So there's so many aspects to look at: doctrinal changes, what happened to the finances and the money, and then who's doing the work of God today. Those are the questions, and they're all answered in a lot of great ways in this book, Raising the Ruins.
Right, and a lot of the things that we're doing, people might say, well, the circulation of the magazine isn't as large, or maybe there's not as many television program or television stations that the Key of David program is on. But when you think of just the large-scale destruction that took place right before this work started, well, that's a big reason for it. And a lot of people have been alienated from religion, probably permanently, because of what happened, although the message still goes out, and hopefully some people can have a change of mind.
Well, and that's one of the really disappointing things when you look at the landscape of religion, whether it be in the case of the Worldwide Church of God or other groups that are out there, is that a lot of people, they see it as a fraud. They don't see it as honest. And in a lot of cases, they're right.
Yeah.
Because a lot of things aren't honest. That's not the case with what Herbert Armstrong did. It's not the case with what, you know, we're doing here today, where, yeah, it takes money to do things, obviously. If there's something you can do in life without money, I don't know what it is. But as far as making an impact, you do have to spend some. But that's the point. What are you doing with those finances? And that's what Raising the Ruins really takes a look at. You know, it's not wrong to have $1 billion. We'd all love it. But what are you going to do with it? That's the question.
Right. And there are people who obviously who say that they don't trust religion. That's, of course, understandable when there are probably hundreds of thousands of different denominations of all types of religion. And yet, if you think about it for a second, how could all those different denominations with different beliefs possibly be right? So clearly, a lot of churches are off the track. It doesn't mean that every single one of them is, but there has to be a work out there that is doing something special, doing something different. And there's only really one set of beliefs that God has. He doesn't have a morphing set of beliefs for all these different denominations.
Yeah, right towards the end of this book, Raising the Ruins, it gives some really good perspective here. It says, just as far as if you're looking at doing a work for God and how you would do it, Stephen Fleury writes, there is a reason Christ called this the first and great commandment, that you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all of your mind. He says, God's love is unselfish, outgoing concern for others. It is giving, first to God and then to all of mankind secondarily. Herbert W. Armstrong put this principle, this law, into action. He gave and gave and gave, and then he died. I think he was in the 90s, 92, 93. Somewhere, but there's quite old.
I think he was in his 93rd year. 93rd is that
year.
What it was?
Yeah, it was right up there.
Yeah.
He died, and he exhausted from the heavy load, he says, that God had laid on his shoulders. But God brought him back to life for a time. Of course, people know that history. He did die there momentarily, and then he was revived. And then he went on and did the greatest work the last few years of his life there in the 80s. And his lifelong work, he says, of service and sacrifice for the good of others proved, as our Savior promised it would, that it truly is more blessed to give than to receive. And God blessed everything Herbert W. Armstrong did. And if you look at those numbers we talked about earlier, how much he left behind, you have to admit that. I mean, that was a blessed endeavor. What happened to the Worldwide Church of God after he died, you could say that was a cursed endeavor because it doesn't exist anymore.
Exactly. That's really, once again, by your fruits you shall know them. And you can see the difference between the two churches. Mr. Armstrong always said that he would never retire because he was doing God's work. And how do you really exactly stop doing that? Even if people don't have an active hands-on part in sending out a magazine or something like that, there are still prayers that can go up. There are still offerings that can be given. And he always had that mindset of doing the work, doing things that were not about himself. And that's why he lived for so long. He said that people who kind of lose their purpose in life and end up dying not too soon after. He never lost his purpose, and he lived a really long life because of that.
Yeah. So, again, go ahead and get this book. It's free, Raising the Ruins. It's at thetrumpet.com. That's one thing you'll notice, too, about, say, anything at The Trumpet or on the Key of David program or this radio station. You never charge for it, which is unusual in the world of religion, I think. But it's because it's being given out because people support it. Some of the chapters here from Raising the Ruins, hopefully to get you a little more interested in it, too, is Chapter 1 talks about absolute power, Chapter 2, legacies, Chapter 3, the self-appointed apostle. There are names mentioned in the book. We're not going to get into all that. But if you want to know all the personalities involved, they are definitely named here in Raising the Ruins. And altogether, 25 chapters. And so it's a really good-sized book, but it's a quick read, and it's a very it's one of those you can just kind of lose yourself in because, you know, an hour or two passes and you're just really engaged with the story. It's fascinating and really stranger than truth in a lot, or stranger than fiction, I guess. Is that the expression?
Yes, stranger than
stranger
fiction.
Than fiction,
yes.
Yeah. It's the truth, but it's stranger than even a story somebody could make up. So really fascinating, Raising the Ruins, and it's at thetrumpet.com. And you can check that out there, The Fight to Revive the Legacy of Herbert W. Armstrong. And we can say we've read it because we have.
Yes, and it is really hard to put down. And I can't even imagine how long it must have taken to put all that together. So many documents that were won in that court case. The court case that took so much sacrifice, because I remember the Philadelphia youth camps that we have every year being put on hold because so much money was going into the court case. And even at the very end, it just looked like there was possibly no way that we'd get those different copyrights. And without those copyrights, what kind of a message do you really have? What kind of a foundation for your beliefs do you really have to send out to people? So there were a lot of miracles that took place for us to win the court case. And what a faith builder that is to see, even when several courts of the land disagree with you, God's still helping the church to win it.
Yeah, and that's really brought out here in this sort of the second part of the book, I guess, when it starts getting into this court battle you're talking about, because the Philadelphia Church of God and the Worldwide Church of God did have to have a court battle about Mr. Armstrong's writings and getting those out. Chapter 17 of Raising the Ruins is Battle Lines Drawn. Chapter 18 is Round 1, PCG. Chapter 19 is Round 2, WCG, those different battles. And then it goes into the counterclaim, and then the preface that was in a book that was used in the court case. It's pretty interesting. And there's a lot of details there that you have to read to really get into. And again, if it's something you're coming to new without any previous history with things, that, you know, it'll lay everything out there for you. But a lot of people are aware of this this court battle and some of these things that happened. And what happened to the Worldwide Church of God and the work of Mr. Armstrong. It's all laid out in Raising the Ruins. There are a lot of people over the years, I've met quite a few actually, that had something to do with the Worldwide Church of God. Maybe never were in it, but they knew something of it. And then years later, wanted to find it and join it. And they said, well, where did it go, or what happened to it? They recognized that things had changed dramatically. And sometimes people didn't notice that quite as much on the inside as the outside. And but this is all exposed here in Raising the Ruins.
Yeah, and you say exposed, that's a perfect way to put it, because the WCG actually, they were on their way to winning that court case if you just talk about, you know, physical legality, but then they offered to sell us those copyrights, and they said as long as you just keep all those documents to yourself that you've uncovered during the court case. And then the founder of this church, Mr. Gerald Flory, said, well, we'll see you back in court then, because we are going to tell the story of what you did, and everyone is going to have to know that you were responsible for really destroying the spiritual lives of millions of people.
Yeah, all of it, again, here in Raising the Ruins. You can find that at thetrumpet.com, and also you can find a lot of other great information there at The Trumpet as well, and including if you don't sign up for the weekly, or I guess it's daily briefs now that come out from The Trumpet. You should go ahead and sign up for those, and they're free as well. They'll get sent to your email inbox, talking about usually something going on in the world news or something happening with trumpet itself, including yesterday's that was sent out. A new booklet's coming out as well. So there's a lot happening, and you can get those email updates sent to your email inbox. You can go to thetrumpet.com and sign up for those. And coming up this weekend, just to plug a few of the programs here, we have at KPCG, the Trumpet Hour Week in Review program. That'll be coming your way a little bit later as well. Also, the Key of David program. And there is a new one this week that it's from one of the personal appearance campaigns that was in Chicago just a few, well, I guess it was last month. And so there's a new television program from one of those. The one is this weekend is Living Hope and Bible Prophecy. And it says, this world is dangerous like never before, but there is hope. The pages of your Bible contain the solutions to all of mankind's problems. You can listen for that here this weekend, and you can watch the video online at thetrumpet.com. And that was a great campaign. We were able to be there to see part of that. So a lot of people came out for that and enjoyed it, and now the listening and viewing audience can see some of that as well.
Yeah, and that's another part of the work that Mr. Armstrong had. He did a lot of personal appearance campaigns as well. So just traveling the world, trying to get a message out there. There were some really excited people at that personal appearance campaign in Chicago last month, just people who were lining up to talk to him because they were just really excited about what he was saying. We talked about the Sabbath versus creation. That was a big part of it. Hope and Bible prophecy, because there is a lot of doom and gloom in the Bible, but there's always a shining light at the end of it. He talked about some things that hopefully a lot of people think about and really consider what to do with it.
Yeah, and we met some people too that listened on the radio station. So, hello, hola.
Yeah, it was funny. Some of them said they told me that they enjoy listening, and then I pointed you out. So that's when I blew your cover.
Yeah,
I said, well, the man sitting in the middle of the room behind the camera, that's the guy in charge of all this.
Well, that's the reason you want to be on radio, so people can't recognize you.
I totally just destroyed that for you.
I'll have to get the those glasses with the fake nose and the mustache, because that's not conspicuous. You see somebody walking around looking like that. But yeah, that was a lot of well, I guess fun would be a good word for it. But it was a very educational, very good campaign up there in Chicago. So you get a chance to hear some of that today here on KPCG and this weekend. And again, you can see the video at thetrumpet.com as well. And as a reminder, Raising the Ruins, that's a free book there at thetrumpet.com. It's been very popular. A lot of people have enjoyed it, but I think a lot more people could get that book and look at it as well. And there are also videos about that, Key of David programs, some Trumpet Daily programs as well, that give you kind of a video synopsis of the book as well. And so you can check those out at thetrumpet.com before getting the book or after you get it. It's just a good synopsis there as well. So another way to kind of get some of that information.
Yeah, it's high drama with a mass appeal. Anyone should be able to read something like that and think of scandal and treachery and really dishonesty and so many things going on behind the scenes that are less than ideal. And a story like that hopefully could really inspire a lot of people, even if they don't care about the doctrinal side of it. It's really a story that could appeal to anybody.
Yeah, and that's why I think the Wall Street Journal was interested, at least in the court case aspect of the Worldwide Church of God, Philadelphia Church of God, of Herbert Armstrong's writings and that battle over those, because it was an unusual case. You don't see that come up in court too often. I don't think they cared anything much about the doctrine, but they were interested in just the legal aspect mm-hmm. of it. So there's a lot of things in Raising the Ruins that are interesting. I think the financial side of it's very interesting because you see a lot about corruption in the news today. And it upset quite a few people as well, obviously, within the organization. Then you have the legal aspect of things with the court case over Mr. Armstrong's writings. And then just the drama of an organization completely changing and trying to keep it from the members of the organization. Really a bizarre situation, and it's in this book, Raising the Ruins.
And even the more galling part at the end of it is how the leadership then went on something of an apology tour, saying how for many, many years they were like in their own dark cave, occasionally stepping out to throw a rock at someone who was walking by. That's how they characterized the work under Mr. Armstrong, and yet he had the most brilliant hope that anyone could ever imagine. So they just really did focus on dismantling what Mr. Armstrong did, even though he inspired so many people, there has to be some sort of a mindset there that it's really rare and it's really dark and it's hopefully something we can't relate to, because why would anyone have that kind of a desire? Why would anyone think it's their Christian duty to destroy everything that Mr. Armstrong did?
Yeah, what would be the motivation for that? Even just looking at the financial side of it a little more today, it just would not be smart. You would not destroy an organization that's doing well and prospering, and yet they did. So again, it does beg the question, why would anybody do that? And the answers are in this book.
Yeah, to this day, they could be still making money. If they'd even thought about it business-wise, they could have continued the work and still be doing quite well.
Yep, really fascinating story. You can check it out. It's in Raising the Ruins, and a lot of great historical documents in there about what happened in that time period after Herbert Armstrong died and what happened to the Worldwide Church of God. Raising the Ruins, it's free. It's at thetrumpet.com. Look at it there or request a copy. It's a really nice size book, and so go ahead and get the physical copy if you'd want to as well. And, of course, it's all free. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us. Hopefully you have a tremendous weekend. And make sure this is the Key of David program, Trumpet Hour Weekend Review as well, all coming up. For myself, Dwight Falk, and for Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.